The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, my next guest is a Dublin-based fitness creator known for his incredible commitment to running 5K every day. He's just passed 800 days in a row. He's passionate about self-improvement and he inspires others to start their own journey towards getting better in any aspect of their lives. But he went through a serious time with addiction before he got where he is today. His name is Chris Connolly and he's sitting with me now. Chris, good morning and welcome.
Pat, thank you very much for having me.
I mean, you're an extraordinary man, 5K every day, but some days a lot more than that.
Yeah. So only 2 days ago, we had ran over 100K in one day. And then yesterday, we had ran 21K. We had been doing it for a little boy, Archie, who needs 3.5 million euro to save him from muscular dystrophy. Uh-huh. He needs a lot of treatment, so he needs a lot of help. And me personally, from my background, I had so many people help me when I was only trying to get the help that I needed, which was different circumstances, but still help nonetheless. And thankfully now I'm in a position where I can help others.
Now let's go back in time to where your problem started. You were kind of just becoming a teenager.
Yeah, so when I was a teenager, I was born in our city, Dublin. And for most of my life, even starting off, like, I didn't really know who I was. I also didn't know who I wanted to hang around with. But I did know that I just wanted to be safe. And that led me to hanging around with the wrong people, doing the wrong things.
You were being picked upon.
Yeah.
Therefore, you went to the people that you thought might protect you.
Yeah, because I used to have really, really bad acne. And now, still to this day, I have scars because my acne was so bad. But back then, like, I found that I was targeted very, very easily. I felt very, very vulnerable, very raw. But at the time, I didn't know what I was feeling because I was only a young boy. But I knew I didn't feel good.
You were self-conscious about your acne, were you?
Yeah, I was so self-conscious and I was just always afraid, you know. I was always very, very afraid. And anywhere that I went and anywhere that I walked and even in school, I was afraid that people would make a comment on it or speak about my appearance. And that's really, really...
Like they would call your names, I presume.
Yeah, they used to give me a really hard time, you know, a really, really hard time. Even young kids who didn't know what you were saying, they used to say like, oh, look at him with the lumps on his face or anything like that. And that was very difficult, you know.
So you, to protect yourself, you hung around with people who were up to no good.
Yeah, so basically I tried to keep myself as safe as I could and I started to hang around with people who were in gangs and basically people who are going out taking drugs or selling drugs or up to no good or criminality or anything along the lines of that. And before I knew it, I became a product of my environment. I started to act and behave in the certain ways that they did too because I wanted to fit in. And I didn't know back then, but obviously I know now that all I just wanted to be was part of. I just wanted to be safe. I wanted to be seen. And even though I wanted to be seen, I wanted to be invisible at the same time, which is ironic. But yeah. A lot of people can definitely understand that. But yeah, I just wanted to feel like I was going to be
now,
all right.
It's funny that the first drug you came in contact with was something that was doing you good. It was a treatment for acne.
Yeah. I actually took Roaccutane when I had started off. And that completely like changed my life, you know. Roaccutane was my first sort of endeavourment with drugs, as you said. But also, I found that when I started to come towards the end of the course, my skin was just getting so much better and so much better, and it really, really started to help me. But along the lines of me doing that then, I started to seek validation, you know. I started to seek fulfillment and instant gratification, which led me down the route of drinking and drugs and anabolic steroids then as well.
How bad did it get?
So addiction is progressive and my addiction definitely was progressive.
You mean you need more and more
to
achieve the same result?
Yeah. But also, like, you're doing the same thing again and again, and you're expecting different results, which ultimately is the definition of insanity. But I kept using different drugs and I didn't really realise it. I would use cocaine and I would use marijuana, and then I found myself going to the gym and I would be injecting myself with testosterone. And the reason why I was doing all these things, because I was always trying to be perceived as somebody who I wasn't. I always wanted the people to think that I was one of the lads or one of the boys or I was this big muscly fella, when in reality I was just crumbling from the inside.
Now, it did come to a head at one point, didn't it?
Yeah, so I got away with my drug use for a long time, but a lot of people around me would probably disagree with yeah. that.
Were you destructive to personal relationships at that time?
Yeah. Like I had been going out with a lady who was my daughter's mother. She was an absolutely fantastic girl, and unfortunately, I had ruined that relationship. You know, probably one of the biggest regrets that I've ever had in my life. But that's what. Drink and drugs and addiction does to you, you know. You hurt the people who love you the most, and that's what I was doing. I was progressively, completely and utterly destroying my whole life. And before I knew it, I had been just binging again and again with alcohol and cocaine. And one day it came to a head when I decided that I wasn't getting the same effect out of cocaine, and I decided to start smoking crack cocaine, and that's when I completely lost my mind.
And when you say that, it was literally that. You became paranoid. You thought someone was out to get you.
Yeah, so I can remember it was like a snap almost, where it was like I was in this alternate universe, but it was in the same reality. And it was an instant flash of thoughts, feelings, emotions, and also the overwhelming feeling that I'm going to be targeted by a hitman, and the hitman's coming to kill me. And he's also coerced my family into convincing them that I need to be killed because I've done something that I can't recollect or comprehend, but it's definitely happening.
And you believe that, absolutely?
So much that I had to flee the country. I ended up getting on a boat in the middle of COVID, and I fled to England. I actually made my way to Holyhead, got 3 trains still to this day, don't know how I done it, made my way down to London, and then start sleeping in bushes and park benches in London.
Did you intersect with the authorities when you were in London?
So when I was over in London, my family had actually reported me as a missing person, but me, I didn't realise what was going on because I was convinced I was going to be killed. I thought some fella was coming to execute me. And I was contacted by the Metropolitan Police. But obviously, in my paranoia, I'm thinking to myself,
this
fella thinks that I'm going to believe he's the Metropolitan Police. So I remember I texted him, send me a picture of your badge. And he sent it to me through WhatsApp. And he was obviously just trying to reassure me. But I was looking at it, I was thinking to myself, these guys think I'm this stupid. And that added into the paranoia. And it's great to be able to laugh at it now, you know. But back then, I was just so afraid, so afraid.
So how were you saved?
To be quite honest with you, still to this day, like, I can't really put it into words, but it's just by complete and utter luck and love and God. And I don't know, but like, my dad and my sister had come over to London to look for me. They had found me, and when they found me, they said, look, everything is going to be all right. And they tried to give me a coffee and a pastry. And I can remember thinking the coffee was poisoned. And I looked at my dad and I was like, this guy wants me dead. And I know it's crazy. Yeah. It's bizarre. But at that time, I was just, and anybody who understands psychosis, and that's where I was in at the time, drug-induced psychosis, you'll understand just how sad it really is. And to be in the position that I am today, to be able to converse the way we're conversing about it, and speak in a positive term almost, is a blessing, because back then it was so bad that it was going to take my own life.
So how did they persuade you that they weren't out to poison you, that they actually wanted to help you?
So when you're in psychosis, it's almost like you're in it and then you're out of it. But when you're out of it, you think you could be still in it. And when you're in it, you're immersed in it. And for anybody thinking that sounds like a lot, well, imagine trying to be in it, you know. They just said to me, we think you need help. And we think you need to go to treatment. And they checked me into a psychiatric unit over there in London. And then I had convinced them in the psychiatric unit that I thought my parents were in on it again. And it created this whole trauma again. But long story short, I end up just listening to them and going home and trusting them. And on the way home, there was still this battle where I was on, because this was in the middle of COVID, I had to get a boat home because there was no planes and you weren't allowed to travel. And I was on the boat and I was saying to them, no, I can't go home. I can't do it. I know there's something going on. And even though you always think that there's not, I promise you there is. So it was this battle, back and forth. But the only way I can describe it is by the mercy of God. You know, my nanny and grandfather who passed away were definitely looking down on me. And it's one thing that I believe to this day.
So you went into rehab and recovery.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay there?
So when I went home, I had reached out to Asheree, which is a treatment facility, and they have primary treatment, and I never knew the difference. But basically, primary treatment is 28 days, and it's where you're immersed in a house with other people, and they're trying to get sober, and they're either alcoholics or addicts or people who have been overeating or anything along the lines of that. And in that treatment centre, they teach you how to understand your addiction. Understand your trauma. They teach you how to act and behave in certain ways for you to start to go back out into the real world and be able to handle yourself. But the biggest thing that I got from it, they helped me to realise what was going on in my childhood. All those negative emotions, all those reasons why I was drinking and doing drugs. And I started to realise who I truly was as a kid, and I started to embrace the fact that I was very, very insecure and very, very afraid, and that I was going to actually be all right.
Did you stay for longer than the 28 days?
So at the end of the 28 days, they let some people go back into their own surroundings, but they had suggested to me that I needed to do secondary treatment. And secondary treatment is an intensive stay from 3 to 6 months where 9 other males, and you're learning how to reintegrate into society. And at the end of the 28 days when I was in treatment, I can remember thinking to myself, you know what, I just want to go home and be the dad to my daughter that she deserves. And there and then it hit me that I had one of the toughest decisions that I ever had to make. Because like as a man, I was always afraid that somebody else was going to come in and be a dad to my daughter. I was going to be one of these broken families where like I was that deadbeat dad, you know. And my daughter would always spend her life searching for me. And I was terrified that she was going to find that in somebody else. And I made the hardest decision in my life to go to secondary treatment, but it turned out to be the best decision I've ever made.
Now, when you're in secondary treatment, you're there. I mean, you don't go into the real world. But there was one avenue of escape.
So I always say that in the nicest way possible, when you go to secondary treatment, it's almost like prison. They keep you there and you're confined, but they allow you to go out for a little bit of time. And they used to tell us that you're allowed to go out if you want to go to the gym or if you want to run. And I had been going to the gym all the time. And I was like, you know what, I'll actually go out running. And one of the days I went out running, I said, you know what, I'm going to tell all the lads that I ran a half marathon. And as I was out running, I realised how hard it was. And then I only realised that I actually done that all my life. I'd tell people that I was going to do something and I'd never do it. I'd always lie, I'd cheat, I'd steal, and I'd act and behave in certain ways that I thought everybody else wanted me to act and behave in, when in reality I was doing another. On that specific day, I made sure that I ran the 21K and I was wrecked. And I went home and I turned around to the lads and I says, I ran 21K today, and none of them cared. Nobody cared, but I did, because that was the first time in my life that I told the truth.
And then that was the beginning of your running career.
Yeah. So running to me is something that has helped me tremendously. And like, I'm somebody who, if I can't express my thoughts, my feelings or emotions, I get very anxious and I get very worked up. And that's what always led me to drinking and taking drugs. Whereas if I have an argument with you today and I run, well, then when I'm running, I'm being able to delve into that argument.
Process the whole thing.
I'm able to process it. And rather than killing Pat Kenny, I'm killing him in my head, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I'm being able to unravel all this. And by the time it's gone, it's done, I'm relaxed, I'm a little bit more understanding. And it just helped me so much. I can't even explain it.
Now, it's become your thing because you actually run and talk to people and record people while you're running.
Yeah. So when I was in treatment, I always looked at people on the TV and I always looked at people who are famous, or I always wondered, how did those people get to be where they are today? Have they been through some sort of struggle that I've also been through? And I always wanted to know that, how did they get to be where they are today? So I started to ask them and I started to interview them. And then I was started to realise that each and every single person right across this planet has been through trauma, has been through their own struggle. But the only difference between successful people and people who aren't successful people is that successful people always find a way, and unsuccessful people always find an excuse. And I always found an excuse, and I made sure that I flipped that, and I wanted to tell the world that they could flip it as well.
You have a lot of followers.
Yeah, so across Instagram and TikTok, I have a 250,000 now. Yeah,
wow.
So it's not about the followers for me. At the start, I just wanted, first of all, I wanted my area to know that I wasn't crazy anymore. And then I wanted the world to know that I was sober. And then I wanted to be able to help other people by ultimately helping myself. I wanted people to know that it was okay not to be okay. I wanted people to know that I've been through certain things in my life and for them to be able to relate, because that's something that really helps me. When I can resonate or relate to somebody who's also gone through a very, very difficult time, even though it's difficult for the both of us, it helps you better together, you know. I think that through struggle and through adversity and through hardship, when you speak to another human being, you connect with each other. And that's what people need, connection. The opposite of addiction is connection.
How are things with your daughter now?
Brilliant. Brilliant. I have the best relationship with my daughter. My daughter's name is Lucy Jane, and me and her just get on like a house on fire. So much now that she's ringing me and she's asking me, where am I? What am I doing? And it's brilliant. Now, me and her mother are on the best of terms. We're not together, but that's something that I never thought that I'd be able to salvage. I always thought that I'd be angry or jealous or resentful or trying to stop her from living her life, which I did for a little while, you know. And it took me a lot to realise that, like, you can always rectify things, you know.
Now, in addition to your running and your raising money for really important charities and so on, you have a live show coming up.
Yeah, my first ever live show. It's going to be on the 17th of next month, which is May, in the Ambassador Theatre. And I'll be joined by three of my previous 5K with Chris guests, Eric Roberts, Charlene Murphy and Paul Merriman.
Ask Paul,
you know,
yeah.
Paul.
Oh, yeah, we know Paul well.
Paul is a very, very good friend of mine. And the reason why I had asked Paul to come onto the show is because Paul had helped me tremendously through my sobriety and through getting to be where I am today. And I always say to him, but he's almost like a father figure to me, you know. Mm. He's helped me tremendously and so much, in fact, that, like, I'll never, ever be able to pay him back. Yeah. Even today he was saying to me that I owe him a certain amount of money, but I'll have to make it up in different ways.
No, Paul is a dynamo.
Oh, he's brilliant.
No question about
brilliant.
It. So 5K with Chris, ongoing. Yeah. Paul obviously was one of those people who ran with you, I presume.
Yeah. So the reason behind 5K with Chris is because I want people to see the people who they look up to, you know. Everybody looks up to someone, but not everybody realises that those people who they're looking up to have the same struggles that you have, you know. And that's what I think connects people, understanding that everybody has struggle, everybody has adversity, but not everybody has those excuses, you know. And
Chris, the live show, we better tell people about it, because, you know, what you've been saying to me, this would be a fabulous TED Talk.
Yeah,
would. You should be doing a TED Talk.
So in the live show, I'll be telling everybody about my struggle. I'll tell everybody about my strength. I'll tell everybody about my adversity, but I'll also be interacting with the crowd and I'll be getting them up onto a treadmill to do a live version of 5K with Chris. But I'll be asking them some uncomfortable questions, some funny questions, but also I'll be giving them away some prizes then as well.
Who sets the speed on the treadmill?
I'll set the speed on the treadmill.
Anyway, it's on in the Ambassador on the 17th of May. How do people book?
So for anybody who wants tickets, the ticket link will be available on my Instagram page. My Instagram handle is Get Better with Chris, and you'll be able to see all the tickets there, all the information and all the guests in the oncoming days.
Chris Connolly, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.